Hello to all my friends and all of my issues. It's a me, Mario. Woohoo! Mamma mia. You guys, you're number one. Woohoo! Are you number one? Ho ho! Wait a second, bro. Here we go. Woohoo!
Hello, Internet, and welcome to another episode of All of My Issues. In this episode, episode 17, it's a special Christmas episode. All of our topics have to do with Christmas, and we talk about music, movies, and TV in this episode. But before we get to that, let's talk about Geek Fuel. If you're anything like us, and let's face it, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are, you enjoy geeky things, and one of the best ways to get your monthly geek on is to subscribe to Geek Fuel. Geek Fuel will send you a box monthly filled with comic book, gaming, sci-fi, and pop culture related material. Right now, if you go to our website, allofmyissues.com, and click the Geek Fuel link, you can save $3 off of your Geek Fuel subscription. Okay, let's get started. Hello, Internet. I'm Rick.
I'm Sam.
I'm Chris.
And today we are going to talk about our favorite Christmas-related items, I guess. Movies, yes. Themes, songs, all the above.
Yeah, so, pieces of pop culture.
There you go.
It's our Christmas special!
Yay! Little nuggets of Christmas joy.
Sweet. Yeah. This is where we see what it would be like if we were never born.
Yes. The podcast never existed. All right. So, anyways, we got some shows to go over and stuff, and
yeah,
music, and I guess we'll get started. So, who wants to go first? I guess we'll go that way.
I don't care.
It doesn't matter.
Sam, go first.
All right. I'm gonna go first. So first, like to say Feliz Navidad, Happy Holidays, go. Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa.
Covering all the holidays.
Covering all
here
the
Kwanzaa.
So that's it.
We missed one. We apologize.
We are sorry. I'm going to start
winter
with
solstice.
Is winter solstice.
Yes, there you go. Yep.
December. For you non-believers.
That's there you go. Yeah.
It's December.
People just like lights.
Yeah. Like snow angels.
Snow angels and whatnot.
For my Christmas list here, I'm going to start off with something new that just actually came out this month. It is Gwenpool Holiday Special Merry Mix-Up, a comic book from Marvel Comics featuring our favorite pink suit wearing wannabe assassin Gwenpool. Little fun fact: Gwenpool is her actual name, which is kind of funny. Her actual name is Gwenpool, but the reason why they call her Gwenpool is because when she was trying to get a costume to be kind of like a mercenary or whatever, when she wrote her name, they thought it was just Gwenpool. So they thought it was like one word. So they thought it was like maybe some sort of clone Gwen Stacy and Deadpool or something like that. But no, that's actually her name.
Is Gwenpool. So there's Gwenpool. No really connection to Gwen Stacy?
No.
Interesting. No. See, I thought
as a non-reader of the comics, I just assumed that it was.
Yeah,
no,
me too.
No,
me too.
It got, and I was reading some information about, because this is the first Gwenpool comic that I ever picked up. And I was reading, you know, did some research, and basically, she is from a different dimension, but her actual name is Gwenpool, and I think everything it clears up about where her name comes from in a Howard the Duck issue. So she shows up in Howard the Duck, the newest Howard the Duck issue. So, that's a little fun fact.
That is a fun fact because I didn't know that.
We just assumed that.
So no connection to Spider-Man at all then?
Not really. So if I'm wrong, you know, you let us know. But that is what my research has came up with. So
very good.
But a little bit about the episode, a little bit about the issue. Gwenpool wakes up and, you know, she sees her friends and everything, and they're not celebrating Christmas. They're celebrating Pantsgiving. And Gwenpool's like, what is Pantsgiving? And what Pantsgiving is when you go and you buy people that you care about short pants. Like short shorts.
Like Daisy Duke type short shorts?
Not like Daisy Duke, more like
a female MMA fighter would wear?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know what you call those.
I don't know what they're really called either, but yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah.
So like Spance.
Spants
maybe.
and we'll also go
cool with Spance. I'm wearing them right now.
Oh, nice. We all are.
the power of radio.
makes the podcast more free for
you. Exactly. We gotta, you know, gotta stretch out a little bit.
Exactly.
Your couch is a little dirtier.
And
Andy moves on.
And anywho,
that's not cat hair on the couch.
Right. Oh man.
Such a special Christmas episode.
It is. That's right. Full of eggnog goodness there.
Yeah.
Well, but what else is very interesting in this book is that Galactus is the Christmas spirit. So instead of Santa Claus, they celebrate Galactus coming and giving gifts.
The death of your planet.
And that's the crazy thing. He's not really into the eating of the planets anymore. He's not even like Galactus. He's like all gold and smiling.
Really?
Yeah. And people they don't believe in. There's people who don't believe in Galactus, just like people that don't believe in Santa Claus. And like throughout this book, there's like several stories. There's a story with the Punisher. The Punisher is fighting Fin Fan Foom. And, really? And so is Miles Morales. He's fighting Fin Fan Foom, and ends up Fin Fan Foom has short shorts too. Someone gave him short shorts, so he's happy.
So it's like a continuing thing. Yeah, throughout
the whole thing. There's a short story with the Red Skull. It's kind of like
because there's nothing more Christmassy than the Red Skull.
It's kind of like the Christmas Carol with the Red Skull, where everything is like all of the like villains have villain groups like Hydra and AIM, and all of them have joined forces and are one big organization. And there's a scene where Red Skull is like upset because people aren't really, you know, giving him the respect that he wants, and he's like, but everything's going so well, and he has Hawkeye tied up to this device where there's a shark that's going to shoot out and eat him, and so you know, Hawkeye's telling him that,
like a shark cannon.
He's like a shark cannon, and so you know, Hawkeye first like, well, you know, you're an okay kind of guy. He's like, and so shut the beep up or something like that. It's like the whole episode is that kind of dream sequence, and even Red Skull like is talking to Adolf Hitler at some point, like a ghost of Adolf Hitler. And it's like, and he wakes up, it's like, no, you're still getting your butt kicked by the Avengers. So
So like the Hitler like was the ghost of Christmas past.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. And so
basically, you don't want to be the ghost of Christmas future.
That is true.
Exactly. One of the interesting things about this issue is that one of the, like around this time, around Thanksgiving or whatever, there is a day where all of the different universes, people can cross to the different universe. So that means someone who had died can, on that one day, can come back and come visit you.
Huh. Mm.
And that was kind of like interesting, where Gwynpool is from a different dimension. And so basically, well, it gets to the point where she sees Galactus and is like, and she's like, hey, we got to fix this. And he's like, yeah, I understand. I gotta fix this. I kind of skipped the part. I'm sorry. The reason why all this is happening is because at one point, Santa Claus, Gwynpool finds Santa Claus, and Santa Claus had wished that he wasn't Santa Claus, and he didn't realize how powerful he was. So it screwed up everything, every other holiday.
Oh, okay.
And so that's why Galactus is all jolly and not eating planets. That's why there's Pantsgiving and all these other different wacky holidays. And so basically they fixed that and everything, but it also alludes to the fact that Gwynpool misses her dimension and is stuck in ours. So it's a pretty, you have to read it a few times, because there's also a Deadpool story where Deadpool is at a Halloween competition and everyone's dressed as who's the best Deadpool, and Squirrel Girl is the host of the contest, and it's pretty funny. And Deadpool's like, I'm Deadpool, I am the guy, I should like get win. So if you haven't got read it, I suggest it's a good read. It's pretty funny and it's pretty wacky. So
that really happened to some a celebrity, and I can't remember if it was like Liz Taylor's. I forget who it was.
Yeah,
they showed up for and they finished second in a lookalike contest.
Yeah,
that is awesome.
So that is my first Christmas on my Christmas list. Gwynpool, the holiday special, Merry Mix Up number one.
All right, that might be, just from your description, that might be my new number one. I don't know.
You had me at Pantsgiving.
Exactly. Spance. All right.
You this way or this way?
It doesn't matter. I can go. mine is my number five, I guess, is Futurama, The History of Xmas. Okay, if you guys haven't seen this episode, this is a classic episode. I love it. Every time I've watched it, I'm just like, oh, this is so good. Basically, what ends up happening is, you know, in Futurama, the whole thing basically takes place in the future, in the year 3000. December 25th is known as Xmas. And what ends up happening is a corporation decided to create a robot version of Santa Claus that, you know, deliver gifts and judge people whether or not they're naughty or nice. But a bug in the programming made...
Have seen this.
Have you seen this?
I thought I didn't see it. Oh, it's been so long. Yeah.
A bug in the programming basically screwed up the Santa Claus robot, the Santa bot, if you will, into basically judging people very harshly and making basically the scale that they had for naughty or nice was way skewed. And if you were naughty, if you were deemed naughty by the Santa Claus robot, he'd kill you, basically. So December 25th, instead of being like a night of joy and happiness, became a night of terror where everybody hid and tried to hide. There was the one song that was a Xmas carol that they had in the show, which goes, he knows when you are sleeping, he knows when you're on the can, he'll hunt you down and blast your ass from here to Pakistan. Oh, you better not breathe, you better not move, you're better off dead, I'm telling you, dude, Santa Claus is gunning you down. So yeah, this is great. The episode's awesome, and it ends with Fry actually giving Leela like a $500 exotic bird as a gift, and because of his act of kindness, it basically saves them from the murderous claws at the end of the episode. So so actually Fry ends up being on the nice list.
Okay.
And that's kind of the end of the episode, and that's pretty much it, you know, as far as the summary goes. But I love that episode. I love Futurama, and that's probably one of my favorite Futurama episodes.
Yeah, I completely thought I hadn't seen that, but I have, after I started.
The robot Santa Claus.
Yeah, I was like, I don't remember a Christmas episode of that at all, but as soon as you read the robot Santa bugging for, oh, yes, I have.
Yes, had the bazooka.
Yeah, all the way.
Flying around, yep.
All right. My number five is a Christmas song. It's my favorite Christmas song. Full disclosure, I work in retail, so I have a mixed relationship with Christmas. So there are aspects I really like and aspects I don't like, and I feel this song kind of covers the fact that you can really like Christmas, but not necessarily like everything about it. So it's called it's actually called White Wine in the Sun. For some reason, I'd written Red Wine in the Sun, but it's White Wine in the Sun. It's by Tim Minchin. It's a very pretty melodic piano. I guess you call it a piano ballad. And the very first words are, I really like Christmas. It's sentimental, I know, but I just really like it. And it goes on, and he basically will then describe something he really hates in great detail that he hates about the holiday. And then he'll say one small fact about it that he really likes. So, yes, I have all the usual objections to the consumerism, the commercialization of an ancient religion, to the westernization of a dead Palestinian pressed ganged into selling PlayStations and beer, but I still really like it. So it's just fun to hear a different thing. And while I normally wouldn't think of White Wine in the Sun as being a Christmas time story, he's Australian, so it's summer there. The idea is that he really likes spending time with his family. So because I'll be seeing my dad, my brothers and sisters, my gran and my mom. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I'll be seeing my dad, you know, etc. And it talks about his baby daughter and learning the importance of family. So it's a nice sentimental song about not being sentimental. So
that's awesome.
It's a fun song. I think I'm the only one here who's heard it, so
yeah, I it sounds like a song I'd want to hear. But yeah, I honestly have not heard that song, but yeah,
I'm throwing it out there.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, all
right. Not much to talk about that one. I did.
Yeah, actually it's funny just you kind of talking about the song made me kind of think of like the kind of like non-traditional Christmas songs and stuff like that, like the Pogue's Fairy Tale from New York. Have you guys heard that one?
No.
There's like
I have. Yeah, I have.
Yeah, I think probably once you hear it, then you're like, oh yeah, I know that one. Where it's the Pogues. I forget what the guy's name from the Pogues is. All I could think of was like really horrible teeth.
But
him and another female singer, they're singing back and forth to each other.
Yes.
You know, saying really horrible things back and forth to each other. But then it really does kind of end really. It's the heartfelt thoughts back and forth, and there's like some line I think. I'm gonna completely skewer it. I'm not even gonna attempt it, but it's a good song. If you haven't heard it, listen to it for sure.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. This is the only song on my list, and there are two other honorable mention songs I just want to mention really quick.
Oh, yeah,
one I cannot remember the name of because I knew it wasn't going on the list, so I didn't look up the name. But it's a Typo Negative song, and it is about Christmas, about remembering all the loved ones that you've lost at Christmas time, and it's really depressing. I can't even remember any. The first words are "Wake up, it's Christmas morn," and I think it's spelled MOURN.
That sounds like a typo.
Yeah, it is. And then he's dead too, so it just makes it even more depressing. And then of course, King Diamond's "No Presents for Christmas."
No Presents for Christmas.
Also, yeah,
which I just played like 30 seconds of, just so Sam could hear what King Diamond sounds like.
Yeah.
Did not know what King Diamond was until now. So yeah.
So now your life is fulfilled.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I saw him on Spotify creating playlists of all the King Diamond songs.
That's right. Yeah. With my Quinpool comics.
Yes, so, yes. There you go. There yeah. it is. That's a perfect soundtrack to Quinpool.
Short pink pants.
Wearing my pants. That's right.
There you go. The imagery in this podcast is amazing.
All right. I'm going to go with my number four. My number four is the Doctor Who Christmas specials. There are several of them, but the ones that come to mind is the Christmas Invasion in 2005, which is when the Doctor and Rose are fighting these aliens, and that's when the Doctor gets his hand cut off in a sword fight. The Runaway Bride is when the Doctor meets Miss Donna Noble. The Voyage of the Damned, that's when the Doctor is on the spaceship, the Titanic, and it's kind of like, that's the episode with Miss Kylie Minogue.
So, yeah, I remember that episode.
Yeah, for sure. And The End of Time is when the Doctor is fighting the Master and also trying to stop some of the Time Lords from Gallifrey from coming, bringing Gallifrey to Earth. The reason why I picked the Doctor Who Christmas specials, it seems to me that these Christmas specials, people are always dying a lot. Like, more than normal in Doctor Who episodes. But these are the ones that stuck out to me because these were pretty good, especially The End of Time and The Voyage of the Damned for me. So, because it's Kylie Minogue, I mean.
Yeah.
So, enough said right there.
That's right. So, if anybody ever wondered what happened to Kylie Minogue, she's in that episode.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is basically the David Tennant run of the Doctor Who. So those are all him. So it's between about 2005 to about, I don't know, 2009, 2010. David.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
So, yeah. There you go.
That's my favorite Doctor Who run is the David Tennant run.
So. See, I'm the ninth Doctor. I'm a Christopher Eccleston guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know a lot of people that like that.
Yeah.
I'm the guy that has only ever watched like two episodes of Doctor Who. Liked them. I still stand by the fact that the 8 minute long Van Gogh clip that I saw on YouTube might be one of the most moving moments of television I've ever seen.
That is a very good episode.
That's a good episode.
I was not prepared to cry that day, but I did.
I
don't know why I've never watched it. That's the weirdest thing. It's a thing that everything I see indicates that it's something that I would love, and I just I think it's a lot to wrap your head around the fact that the show's been on the air most of the years between like 1960 and now. So
that is true. Yeah. And it's a show that like I really enjoy too, like when I do watch it, but it's just like, I don't know, it just seems like there's periods of time where I'll watch it and then like but honestly I probably haven't watched it for like 2 years now. I don't know, I just kind of like fell off and there's just so much other stuff I want to watch, and I don't know, it's, we like Doctor Who though.
Yes, we do.
So, all right, I guess that'll go to my number four, which is maybe like a little bit different than what we normally talk about on here, but we're going to talk about it anyways. Seinfeld, The Strike. The episode is The Strike. It's called The Strike. Many people might often refer to this episode as the Festivus episode instead. The Festivus for the rest of us. But it's actually called The Strike. And I had to go back and just look up information about this episode to find out why it was called The Strike. And it's actually the episode that you find out that Kramer was actually employed before, but he's been on strike for like 12 years. So that's why it's called The Strike. But I think the highlight of the episode is definitely the Festivus. The Festivus for the rest of us. You know,
sure.
George Costanza's dad creates his own holiday. And just all the elements of the holiday that he creates are just awesome. There's
the airing of the grievances.
Airing of the grievances. That's my favorite part, is the airing of grievances.
Then there's some sort of feats of strength.
Tests of strength. Yeah, feats of strength or something like that. There's the Festivus pole that they have. Yeah. You know, it's just a bare pole. There's nothing, you know, decorative about it or anything. Yeah, it's just, it's a... In that episode, it's like everything that's great about Seinfeld, I think. And it just, you know, Festivus for the rest of us. It's just fantastic. So I think it's just a holiday tradition now to you know, to watch that episode.
I have not seen it in some time, but it was fantastic.
Yeah, it is awesome. So I guess that's my number four. I don't know what else to say about it.
All right, my number four. No airing of grievances about that episode.
No
grievances,
none whatsoever.
So it has passed the test of strength.
It's passed the test of strength, indeed.
My number four is a comic book from, the early 90s, probably.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I was in high school, I remember. So
yeah, I was too, I think. Yeah.
I'm just told the internet my age. Okay. Is the Lobo Paramilitary Christmas Special.
And I really wish I would have thought of this. Because as soon as you said it, I was like, oh!
I was so happy that you did not. Because, yeah. In this issue, last surviving member of a species. what would you call him? An intergalactic hitman?
Bounty hunter, right?
Yeah. Lobo.
Yeah,
looks with his fantastic visage. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, he's like a
long hair. He looks like a cross between a bodybuilder and Kiss.
Exactly. It's like if Kiss were professional wrestlers.
Yeah.
Right. You know, that would be like...
Yeah. So he's hired by the Easter Bunny to kill Santa Claus.
That's
already awesome.
So good.
And then, you know, he gets to the compound because the North Pole, it's a compound is the best way I think to describe it.
The
barbed wire. And the elves are all like trained killer. There's violence everywhere. There's eyeballs popping out.
Yeah.
And then he finally meets Santa Claus and his pet gorilla, Kong. It's just kind of random.
Yeah.
I just remember him, Santa, sitting there with a cigar in his mouth and being like, you can call me Chris.
Looking like a big bruiser.
Or sir.
You know?
And they get into a knife fight. And Lobo wins. Spoiler alert.
Lobo, I mean, the comic's been out for
I don't care. From this point forward, anything I say could be a spoiler about whatever it is I'm talking about. So I believe, if I remember correctly, then Lobo drives off in Santa's sleigh and delivers nuclear warheads to every boy and girl on Earth.
Oh, that might be. I
seem to remember that.
That sounds about right.
And then gives us the middle finger.
Yes. I do remember that too at the end. Yeah, that's because it was Simon Beisley that drew the whole. Yeah, and it's awesome.
It's just ultra violent. It's everything that was right and wrong with 90s comics in one issue.
That is very true. Ultra violence and stuff that Lobo's kind of famous for, I guess.
Yeah,
you know,
probably stuff that as an older, if that had come out now, I probably would not have given it two thoughts.
Yeah.
But for 17-year-old me or however old I was, I went to actually look it up because I owned it, and I couldn't find it. I could only find at a French exchange student who stayed with me, so I had a hardback French version of it because he bought it for me.
Called
something like La Noël de Lobo.
I wonder if it'd be better in French.
I don't know, but I don't speak French. So.
Yeah, I don't either. Any French speakers out there?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Ooh la la.
No.
Ooh la la. Les Lobos.
As a carryover from last time, you know who does have a lot of French speakers? Canada.
Eh?
Canada. That's right. Right. That's true.
I'm trying to appeal to the Canadians.
Wow, perfect.
Hi, Canadians.
Yeah.
Sorry for what we said about Nickelback and Bieber last time.
Yeah. We can forgive you, maybe. I don't know about Nickelback, but I'm pretty.
All right. I'm good.
All right.
All right. Well, my number three on my list. It is Classic X-Men issues 6 and 7, which came out in 1987. It is the reprint of the X-Men comic issues 98 and 99, which came out in 1976. The reason why this is on my list is because this is my very first X-Men comic book. I had Superman, I had Flash, and I had Spider-Man, but this was my first X-Men book that I ever bought or got, and so it's kind of special to me. And it happened to be like kind of a Christmas episode. I keep saying episode for some reason. I don't know why. Christmas issue is when the X-Men are out shopping, you know, for Christmas and everything. Everyone's out. Everyone's being festive, and Jean and Scott go to a restaurant that's in a building, and they're having dinner while Wolverine and Nightcrawler and Colossus and Storm are all down on the streets, you know, after doing the shopping. And this is kind of taking place a little bit after the new X-Men has formed. So, you know, they're still trying to get used to one another and stuff. And all of a sudden, the Sentinels come and attack the X-Men. And there's a big battle, and Cyclops almost gets killed, but is saved by Storm. But Wolverine, Banshee, and Jean Grey are captured by the Sentinels, and they are stuck in a space station in space with the Sentinels. And also, Professor Xavier is captured by Sentinels also, and so the rest of the X-Men has to go and rescue them out of space. Like one of the cool things when I was reading it was when Wolverine and Jean and Banshee actually were attempting to escape the space station. And what had happened was, you know, they were fighting their way out, and as soon as Banshee bust through the last wall, they realized they're in space. And so the Sentinels, you know, they're like, I can't breathe, because how would they know they're in space? Sentinels come and save them and capture them back, and the rest of the X-Men come and save the day. So It's got a lot of action in it. It was the first time that I seen Nightcrawler kind of use his device that makes him look human to everybody else. And so it was basically the new X-Men were establishing their powers and their control to some of the old X-Men. Because there's a scene where Storm is taking care of a Sentinel, and Cyclops is screaming at her like, "Hey, like, what are you doing? You're out of control." And Storm turns back, is like, "No, I'm in perfect in control. I know how to use my powers," and basically dismantles the Sentinel all by herself. So, kind of showed me how tough Storm.
So that's the first X-Men story you read?
That's the first X-Men story that
I read. Do you remember the first X-Men story you read?
The first X-Men story I read is actually an X-Men annual, and I remember really liking it. I can't remember exactly what issue it is or anything like that, so I can't really, but I can give you the synopsis of the episode. The episode. There See? You go. The issue. This is all my issues, right?
It is.
So the
not this time. It's all my episodes.
That's right. exactly.
We're all going through like menopause right now, so we're having episodes.
I forget exactly who the creature was or whatever that took over, but basically somebody came into the X-Mansion and kind of took out all the other X-Men except for Wolverine.
Is this where the One Drop of Blood?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is completely crazy. All I had to say was takes out all the other X-Men except for Wolverine. And then, yeah. And I just remember, like, oh, this is such a great issue.
Now, okay, just bear with me here. Yeah. Do you remember the first Spider-Man comic that you... Do you remember the first Spider-Man?
I do. I don't know what the issue is.
No, I was just curious because I remember the first X-Men comic I read.
Oh, do you? Okay.
But I can't say that I remember the first of any other comic book that I read. But I remember specifically X-Men 210. It was right before the Mutant Massacre, and I wanted to know so much about it because the X-Men were hardly in it. If they were in it at all, it was about other mutants and stuff. And then the Marauders showed up and killed them, people that you were in. I was like, they killed people that I just got in. I don't know what's going on. I called up one of my friends, like, I need you to explain the X-Men to me.
What is going on here?
So it was a heck of a time because I really liked the Mutant Massacre.
Now I got to think about what was the first Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember my early Spider-Man. Maybe it's just because of the age. I didn't read an X-Men comic until I was in sixth grade. But
that could be.
I was reading X-Men or Spider-Man comics before that. But
yeah, that's kind of like my first Spider-Man issue. I mean, it wasn't even like during a period of my life where I would say that I was collecting comics, really. Mm-hmm. It was just like the first comic book I think I got. But I've had it for so long. And it was basically it actually has Madame Web in it, I believe.
Ooh, okay.
And I just remember because I think a character called the Owl or something is in it as well. Mm-hmm. And he ends up fighting Dr. Octopus at the end, and Spider-Man being Spider-Man, he puts all of his effort into fighting Doc Ock and ends up like ripping his tentacled arms off at the end of it. And I just remember that being like, oh, that's awesome. Mm. And yeah, I can't really say what else happens in the story except for those things. But yeah, it was like a comic I got.
I was just curious because when you said that was the first X-Men, I started thinking, I remember my first X-Men, and I was like, well, I don't remember my first of any of the others.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the first Star Wars comic I had. It was issue number one. Ripped that cover right off and lost it. Had the first issue of Swamp Thing. Ripped that cover off and lost it. I had a lot of cool things when I was little.
Took better care of. I can't really think of the first of any other issues. Like, I couldn't say, oh, my first issue of Swamp Thing was this, my first issue. I think just Spider-Man and X-Men are the only ones I can think of that are the first ones. Just because they really resonated with me for one reason or another.
So. Yeah, I think with Superman, it was Man of Steel, number one. Like,
oh, okay, I remember that coming out, yeah.
That was Superman. Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's my first Superman comic, though. I don't think it is, anyways. I do
remember.
I remember that distinctly coming out. I do remember the first Ghost Rider comic book I got.
Okay.
Which was like the last issue of the original series.
I was that way with ROM.
Oh, really?
The last issue of I bought a ROM comic. I was like, oh, it's a space robot.
It's got to be good.
Yeah, and then it was like the last issue.
I
was
robots. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Guess I won't be buying this anymore.
All right. That goes back to me, huh?
I digressed. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Not a problem. That's what we do here. Let's see. My number three pick, I guess. That's what we're on, right? It's three?
That's correct.
Is a Christmas special that came out in 1991. And I remember really looking forward to this coming out. It was an Opus Christmas story, A Wish for Wings That Work. Opus from Bloom County is what this is about. And Opus, as some of you, I hope, are aware of, he's a penguin, so he can't fly. So basically the whole premise is, I'm going to really smoosh this down, I guess, so as not to like go on about the whole special, but he wishes for wings that work, hence the title. So he writes a letter to Santa asking him that his one gift that he wants is a wish for wings that work. Bill the Cat's also in this, which is great. I love Bill the Cat. It's one of my favorite characters from Bloom County, just because you know, he's like a crazy looking cat. But as the story kind of unfolds, Opus runs into some ducks, and the ducks kind of make fun of him a little bit because he can't fly. The ducks can't fly. Opus has some thoughts about that. He goes to sleep. In his dream sequence he's having, he dreams of being able to fly, and he's flying in a fighter plane. But then suddenly he's woken up by the ducks, because what happens? Santa's sleigh, as he was flying over their town or whatever, gets detached from his reindeers and falls into this pond covered in ice and stuff. So the ducks come to Opus asking him to help save Santa because they can't swim in the pond because it's too cold. Him being a penguin, oh, that's no problem. So he goes in there, swims in there, uses his wings, because his wings are like flippers, to save Santa and pull the sleigh out and everything. So, but in the meantime, Opus ends up losing, I think he had like goggles on, fire goggles or something like that, because he was, you know, dreaming about flying. He lost them at some point, and Santa gives him his hat and tells him that, you know, his wings really worked helping him, you know, save him from drowning in the pond, I guess. So, you know, he flies off and everything's good or whatever. So Opus is still kind of upset about not being able to fly.
Okay.
So the next morning, Christmas morning comes around, the ducks show up at his house all wearing like bow ties, like Opus does, because he wears like a bow tie because he's a penguin, tuxedo, all that kind of stuff. To make a long story short, the ducks actually like help Opus fly by flying him in the air.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a nice little story, just kind of showing you what, you know, values of, you know, be happy with what you have, because the abilities you have may come in handy at one point that other people won't be able to do, you know, such as like swimming in a frozen pond. Although, you know, not many people can do that, I guess, normally.
I'm still waiting for my massive amount of stupid, useless trivia to come out.
Yeah, I know.
I'm still waiting for that to become useful
in some way. Well, here we go. This is the podcast, maybe. This is where it comes into play, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, so, you know, and then it ends up, you know, Opus asks the ducks why they did that for him. You know, it was a great idea. I'm glad you helped me out. And then, like, Bill the Cat at some point, like, you know, the ducks pointed at Bill the Cat because it was Bill the Cat's idea to do that. So even Bill the Cat, being the dumb cat he is, came up with a really heartfelt gift for Opus.
Dude, I'm about to cry.
I know, I'm getting overclamped. But yeah, no, I love that story because I love Bloom County. The animation I thought was really awesome in it too. And I had always hoped that more would come out from that episode, but alas, there has not been any other type of animated Bloom County type cartoon. So
I did love Bloom County. I've never seen that, but I did always love Bloom County.
Look for it on YouTube. You can actually find it on YouTube. The whole episode's out there because it's, I don't believe it's actually, it's on DVD, I believe. But I think you might have to get, it might be like a pirated type thing. I've seen it on DVD, but I don't think it's like an official release.
So it's a backup.
It's a backup.
Yeah,
bootleg.
For the archives.
It's for the archives.
You know, got it. That's why people, you know, make these bootlegs. You know, it's to preserve history.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Because if we didn't do it, who would?
Who would?
Not saying that we do that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly. That's why other individuals do that.
Right.
Type of stuff. Yeah. So, okay.
All right. My number three came out in 2008. It is a movie. So my next two movies, or my next two things on my list, are only loosely based around Christmas. They take place during Christmas time. Maybe some of the things that you get in there is Christmassy. Maybe it's not, but whatever. I'm going to, because I am a dumb American from Ohio, I'm going to probably not pronounce this the way it's actually pronounced, so forgive me for you Belgian listeners. It's called In Bruges, And it is a movie that stars Colin Farrell, Brendan Gleeson, and I can't say this guy's name either. I don't know how you say his last name for sure. Rafe Fine.
Fines? I think it's just Fines.
It's Fines.
Whatever I said.
Yeah. It's Fines.
Yeah, it's Fines. But I believe he pronounced his first name Rafe, not like it looks Rafe. Like Ralph, but I think
it's
pronounced
Rafe. Yep.
Yeah, Voldemort. It stars Voldemort. It stars Bullseye and Voldemort, and I forget what I've also seen Brendan Gleeson as. But it's the story of a man, a hitman, who goes in to kill a priest, and in so doing, more or less accidentally kills a little boy as well. It was an accident. I don't know if it's an accident. He wasn't sent to kill the young boy, but he kills a young boy. The employer that wanted the priest killed, because he works for a big bad, who is Voldemort.
Well, Voldemort is a big bad. Yeah, so it's kind of typecasting.
It is typecasting. And the young boy he killed? Harry Potter.
Oh, man, I knew it.
In this universe, there's only one. The boy did not live. So no, he sends them off to the Belgian city of Bruges. I don't know. To wait for further instructions, which don't come for quite some time.
Ooh.
Colin Farrell is the young guy, and his mentor is Brendan Gleeson. Colin Farrell is just negative about everything, talks about what a crap hole the city is basically the whole time. And the other guy wants to sightsee, and he's a hitman who wants to go sightseeing. This movie is so hard to explain that I cannot really truly do it credit by just describing the plot. But it takes place at Christmas time. Colin Farrell feels terrible about killing the boy, and Brendan Gleeson gets orders from Voldemort to kill Colin Farrell.
Oh, man.
And when he gets there, he's meeting him at the park. He sees Colin Farrell at the park bench, and he goes walking up behind him, and he puts his hand in his pocket, and Colin Farrell pulls out a gun and puts it up to his own head. And he stops him and calls. I gotta find this quote because it is one of my favorite quotes from a movie. I'm about to swear. I'm about to swear with a word that people hate a lot. Man, I don't. I want to do the quote credit. But I can't find it right now. So I'm just going to do it. This Brendan Gleeson is talking to Voldemort, and he's like, "You're a cunt. You've always been a cunt, and you'll always be a cunt. Except you might have a couple more cunt kids." And that's what sets Voldemort off. He's like, "What? Don't you talk about my kids?" Yeah. And he's like, "I retracted." He's like, "Why would you insult my kids?" He's like, "I said I retracted it, but you're still a cunt." And
Well, I'll see you next Tuesday.
Yeah. It's a dark comedy, but it's not a comedy. There's movie sets. Huh. There's a little person on the movie set. There's all kinds of things. There's a dramatic chase at the end. There's making fun of fat Americans like me. And there's a lot going on. There's a lot of good stuff. And it's a movie. I don't know a lot of. I mean, a lot of people have seen it. I'm sure millions of people have seen it. But I don't meet a lot of people that I've been able to talk to about. So, but it's fun.
Yeah. It's one of those things. I know the movie you're talking about. I have not seen it though. I've heard that it was good, but I can't really.
Yeah,
it's good. I can't authoritatively speak about it.
And like I say, it's loosely about Christmas.
Yeah, because now that you described it, I was like, I remember seeing the preview.
Yeah, that's what I remember seeing too. And I like all the actors in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're just good. Yeah, definitely.
And they're all really good. Like, Colin Farrell's good, but I mean, like, he's great in this movie. And
is it? Yeah. It's kind of, I think he seems to be like one of those actors that I don't know if he's leading role type anything I've seen him in a leading role, like, I don't know if it's been very good. Like, he's better when he's like a side.
Yeah, when he's, you know? Yeah. And he's one of the main characters, but it's more of a companion piece. They're both, yeah, everybody has their own thing. I mean, I guess he probably is the main character in this because it's really mostly about his action and to do with
the repercussions.
The repercussions of being a young hitman who makes a mistake. So it's really good. I recommend it wholeheartedly.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Number two.
Going to number two. And number two is the American Dad Christmas specials. And the ones that I remember are there's one where Steve actually shoots Santa Claus. And for the Smith family thinks they kill Santa Claus, but then Santa Claus pops up and is like, "Why'd you shoot me?" And basically, Santa Claus and all of the North Pole are at war with the Smith family, and basically it's an all-out war with elves and reindeers attacking the Smith family, and the Smith family has, you know, since, you know, Stan Smith is a CIA agent, he has a whole bunch of guns in his cabin, and him and his family just start killing a whole bunch of elves and reindeer, and it's just pretty hilarious. That's one episode. There's a Krampus episode where where you find out why Stan's dad turned out the way he turned out, as being, you know, this kind of a bad father and a not so nice guy. And to be honest with you, this was the first time I ever heard of Krampus was American Dad. I literally thought they made it up.
Yeah, it's funny how like the Krampus seems to have become a little bit of a phenomenon.
Yeah,
like you know, he's popped up in a lot of other things since then. Like I remember I think there's what's the Adult Swim cartoon? I'm trying to think of the Venture Brothers. I think there's a Venture Brothers episode with the Krampus.
I think so.
There's other things too. I know there is. I can't really think of them right now, though. There's a Krampus movie.
Yeah, I know. That's what.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an old tradition.
Yeah. Really, but it's funny that it seems to have taken off so recently.
And I thought that Krampus movie was like, oh, they got that from American Dad. Like, oh no, wait, this thing's been around for a long time.
Because a few years ago, I bought like a Krampus beer. I guess we're plugging in an advertisement here. Yeah. But and it's, you know, the beer was good.
The beer was good.
It's cold. Refreshing. Cold, refreshing. Killed my children.
Yes.
And left me just a bow. And the one other episode I wanted to mention, because this is actually my favorite out of the three, is when the episode starts where Stan and the family are looking for the perfect Christmas tree, and Stan has to have everything right, and he is missing the meaning of Christmas. So, you know, Stan's like, well, I'll do it myself. And so his family tries to go back to the car, and Stan is out in the wilderness, and he cuts down a tree, but the tree kind of falls on him. And so he wakes up in heaven. Well, he doesn't want to be in heaven because his family needs him, because the angel, which doesn't have her wings because, well, she's not a really good lawyer, it shows Stan that, you know, since Stan was so stubborn that his family froze to death because he has the keys. So he's stuck underneath a tree and his family can't get warm. And so Stan is trying to force heaven to send him back. And it basically has him confronting God himself, having a conversation where Stan thinks that he's right all the time. And the part that makes me laugh is when Stan has like a gun from heaven, which is kind of weird anyway. Why are there guns in heaven? I don't know.
Why not?
But Stan has a gun to God's head.
To fight the war on Christmas.
It's the war on Christmas.
Has a gun to God's head, and God's like, dude, do you realize you have a gun to my head? I'm God, and you have a gun to my head. And that's when Stan realizes that he, you know, his attitude as being always right and everything has to be perfect is not the way to go. And so it, we get a happy ending where Stan learns his lesson.
Yeah.
And God basically cusses him out afterward. So there you go.
Everything you should have in a Christmas special.
That's right.
Guns to people's heads. God's head, no less. Yeah. I mean, hey.
You know, guns in heaven. Yeah. Why not?
Christmas specials and massages. Two places where it's great to have. Never mind. Whoa. We'll just stop there.
Yeah. All right. That's, we're on number two, right? So.
Excuse us. Let us not forget. We're dropping the deuces.
That's true.
I move to have our podcast forever changed. Number twos anytime. Are dropping the deuces.
Dropping the deuces. I think we should patent that, right?
We'll drop the deuce.
Dropping the deuces.
Dropping the deuce.
All right. So I'm going to drop the deuce right now. and say my number deuce is a Twilight Zone episode. Twilight Zone not normally typically being associated with Christmas, I guess, or even anything that's not creepy. And Twilight Zone is normally kind of quasi scary, quasi unsettling. And I'm talking about the old episodes. This episode originally aired December 23rd, 1960. And it was written by Rod Serling. Rod Serling was an incredible powerhouse writer. It's amazing just how much he wrote for those episodes. I can't even understand how he's able to. And not only that, but like the quality. It's got to be. Nicotine.
There's something in those cigarettes he smoked at the beginning of every episode.
There had to be because not only that, but like the quality. Like I don't think they've ever been able to reproduce like anything even close to those Twilight Zone.
This podcast brought to you by Winston-Salem.
exactly. If you want to be a great writer, you got to smoke some cigs
and drink Krampus beer.
And drink Krampus beer. That's right. This
is a decidedly more adult podcast.
Exactly. The story though kind of doesn't really have any of those stereotypical elements to it. It's not really scary, not too unsettling, really. But it involves a guy, his name is Mr. Corwin. He's fired from a department store for being drunk, as he was basically a store Santa. Showed up to work drunk, so he got fired. He goes and stumbles around and comes across a sack of presents.
Mm.
And what he ends up finding is that the sack of presents, when he reaches in and pulls something out and hands it to somebody, it's the perfect gift that they want.
Okay.
And basically, some police officers see him doing this, and they think that he's stolen these presents and just put them in the sack. But basically, as the story unfolds, you find out that actually the sack happens to be magical. And anything you pull out of it is a Christmas present. So he has a magical sack.
I just want to point out that when typically when you're talking about drunk Santas and their magical sacks, you don't want your kids anywhere near them. But this time it's okay.
It's okay. Because he goes around. He goes to a neighborhood filled with children and gives them all the presents they want. Okay. So it ends kind of nice. At the end of the episode, though, at like midnight, an elf arrives and takes this drunk Santa to the North Pole. So maybe kind of leaving it open that maybe that drunk Santa was actually Santa the whole time, or, you know, something's going on there. Maybe, I don't know. Either way, I think that episode was fantastic. It was awesome. All right. So, as I like most Twilight Zone episodes, and as I've said before, I love those anthology type series and where you get one whole story in one episode and you're done. That's it. That's all I have to say about Santa's magical sack.
I wish I had a magical sack.
Don't we all? Don't we all, Sam?
I just would like to point out I did 5 years in county for dressing up like Santa Claus and trying to give kids gifts for my magical sack.
Magical sacks.
Are we ready for me to drop my numero
duso? I think so. Duso.
Okay.
Duso. Like that.
You gotta write this down.
Man.
My number deuce, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It's a movie written by Shane Black, the guy that wrote Lethal Weapon.
All right.
Wrote Iron Man 3, directed Iron Man 3. I think he might direct Lethal Weapon. I can't remember. But anyway, great writer. I don't want to give too much away because the movie really isn't about the plot. It's about the interaction of the characters. But the long and short of it is Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
He plays a small-time thief who gets caught robbing some store or something. Safe, I think. And he's running away from the cops. And he runs into a room, and the room he runs into after going, you know, whatever, is a screen testing room. And they give him the script and tell him to read it.
Okay.
And as the cop busts in, he's giving this speech that he's reading, which ties into his life a little bit. And he begins to get emotional as he's reading it. And the emotion that he portrays, like the people who are there judging the screen test are like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Like, you know, they sign him up for the role where he's going to be playing a private investigator. So they hook him up with a real private investigator. They fly him to California, hook him up with a real private investigator played by Val Kilmer.
Okay.
Who's named Perry. They go to a Hollywood party so he can see what it's like to be they're at a Hollywood party, but they get wrapped up in basically a bigger plot of murder and intrigue. And I don't want to give too much away because this is a movie that I just recommend everyone just see.
Got it.
But it is an absolutely fantastic movie. There's a couple parts in there where you have to kind of suspend your beliefs because there's some, like, he meets the thing that always bothers me, he meets a girl and he just immediately falls in love with her, and it turns out it's a girl he knew from school. You know, and too much of a coincidence. And man, I understand people change, but you wouldn't recognize her. Whatever. Anyway, it's not without faults.
Okay.
It only loosely ties into Christmas, and in that it takes place during the Christmas season. There's some Santa hats. There's some things like that. Has nothing really to do with Christmas other than that. My list was more about non-traditional Christmas stuff. So. I really don't, like I said, I don't want to spoil it. So I'm just throwing out my deuce and letting it settle for a while.
Let's do full.
Look, here's the thing. I put the deuce out there. I want you guys to experience my deuce for the first time. I don't want to ruin the deuce.
Yeah. And we would never ask you to ruin the deuce.
Right. So I don't want to explain too much about all the components that make up my deuce.
Because we all know the deuce.
Yeah. I want you to just take a little bite of it. Just see what you think.
There you go. There's corn in that deuce.
It's you know, at times it's a little corny. I get you. There's some things you might not be able to look past, but overall, you know, any deuce that contains Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer is guaranteed. And written and, you know, created by Shane Black is going to be good. So,
yeah.
I understand you didn't like Iron Man 3 that much.
Yeah, not a huge fan of Iron Man 3. Yeah, it was okay. I thought it was definitely probably the weakest of the three films I watched.
I always will put Iron Man 2 as the weakest of the three.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I liked the writing. I didn't care for the big reveal of the Mandarin not being the Mandarin.
I didn't care for that. I think that was ultimately my problem with the movie. Yeah. I think really it was just that the Mandarin was.
Did you see the little thing from the DVD?
I did. Yeah, it made me feel a little bit better about it too. But
it's hard to put the Mandarin in a movie and not make it ridiculously racist.
Yeah, I guess that is true. But I was okay. I guess my problem with the Mandarin more so was that he wasn't really a criminal mastermind or anything, really. He was just kind of the actor that was hired to portray. Yeah, so it was just like, oh. Like, he's, you know, because I was okay with him not having the reins, not being, you know.
I thought it was typical, but I was like, oh, that's a light, nice little twist. Yeah. But you, as an Iron Man, you know, as a person who you grew up with Iron Man and a Mandarin, you're like, you kind of were disappointed because it was like you were looking forward to like some sort of magic element in Iron Man, because that was always Iron Man was always science, mm-hmm. and Mandarin was magic.
Well, maybe with this phase two they could add some stuff with you know, introducing a magic system.
That could be, maybe they can give him his rings or something like that and make, I don't know, the I mean, the only time like where they made the villain kind of like the non-traditional version of him that I think really worked well was for Captain America Civil War with Zemo, because that was, you know, I have no complaints about that whatsoever.
Because
it caught me completely off guard, the how it ended and everything. I was just like, that's awesome.
Yes. So,
well done, Russo brothers. Yeah, well done.
Our buddies, the Russo brothers.
That's right.
You could say that it was exciting getting a chance for finding Zemo.
For finding Zemo.
That would be a great tie-in thing together.
To say, that should be like...
Disney, you own both properties.
Yeah, right? That could have been like a short they could have made.
Yeah. Seriously, let's see. I'm trying to... Just having not thought of this before, you've got a father who loses his wife and kid.
Oh, man. Maybe his kid all is his not kids, really...
except for one. I mean, I don't know.
Findings.
Maybe one of them's still in the rubble.
Right?
Write this out. I'm just saying.
Yeah. We put this out in the universe, so I think we'll make this happen, because Finding Zemo. I love it.
And the guy from Memento could be his guy.
That's one of the funniest pictures I've ever seen. I don't know. I never told you this. I had it on my Facebook page for a while. It was Dory, and she was tattooed with Dory, and it said, like, John G. raped a kid.
Memento, that is a good movie. I have not seen that movie since the first time I watched it, but
I've watched it so many times. I haven't watched it in a while, but it's so good.
It is so good.
It's one of my favorite Nolan films, and that says something. He's made so many good films.
I
love the scene where he's running. He's like, okay, what's going on? All right, I'm chasing this guy. Nope, this guy's chasing me.
so good. Oh, man.
All right, my deuce is done.
Your deuce is done.
He's done with his deuce. We're going to number one.
The R. Kelly Memorial placement on the list.
Oh, man.
Our number one in a partridge in a pear tree.
Yeah.
There you go.
Number one is A Muppet Family Christmas.
Yay!
1987 Christmas special. This featured the Muppets, and it has special guests, the Fraggles, and the Muppets from Sesame Street.
Oh, man, it was like a Muppet.
It was Muppetception. It was Jim Henson, all of his babies, all in one setting. Well, basically, what happened was there was...
If only Labyrinth would have shown up.
Can you imagine? And the Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
I want to see...
Like, what the heck?
I want to see some Gelflings. Gelflings. Gelflings.
The story starts out with, as the Muppets are trying to figure out what they're going to do for Christmas, and Fozzie's like, why don't we just go out to
to my mom's house and stay out there for Christmas. And they're like, oh, all right. So they all get into, you know, all get into the bus and drive into to Fozzie's mom's house. Meanwhile, Fozzie's mom is getting ready to pack up and head south. I think she was going on vacation. I think she was going on a cruise.
Ah.
And so she rented her house to Doc and Sprocket from Fraggle Rock.
Mm.
And for them to stay there for the holidays.
Huh.
And so they show up and they're like, hey, how you doing? And she's like, oh, here's the house. And, you know, this is where everything's at. So, you know, I'm about to leave here. And all of a sudden, Fozzie comes with all of the Muppets. Like, hi, Mom. And so they, you know, she cancels her plans. And, you know, they make arrangements. And it's like, hey, who are you? Hi, I'm Doc. Who are you?
I'm Kermit. Yay!
And so meanwhile, Miss Piggy's like in New York and there's a big snowstorm coming. And so throughout the whole episode, the whole special, they're trying to, you know, Miss Piggy's trying to make her way to Fozzie's mom's house. You know, they're singing songs like, oh, I wish she was here, and oh, I wish I was with my Kermit. Me doing the voices and everything. And, you know, that's happening. And then, you know, they somehow run into the Fraggles down in the basement in Fraggle Rock because there's a hole in the basement and it leads to a part of Fraggle Rock. So some of the Muppets meet the Fraggles, and then, you know, the big singing number, you have all the people walking from Sesame Street singing Christmas carols. So I don't know how far a walk they did where Fozzie's, because Fozzie's mom lived out in the country, so I don't know how far Sesame Street is, yeah. But you know, so you got them all singing, and if you are a huge Muppet fan like I am, it was just awesome. You can find this on YouTube. There is a DVD, but there's two DVDs. There is A Muppet Christmas, which this is not that, so people kind of get confused. This one is called A Muppet Family Christmas, and like I said, it's from 1987.
See, I thought when you first mentioned this, I thought, oh, I've seen this. Now I really don't think I've seen this. And I really want to see this because if it includes Fraggles. It includes and
Fraggles and all of them. Man. Yeah. Like I said, if you look on, it's on YouTube, but if you try to like look it up on Amazon, it's you can't find it, but you may get confused by the other Muppet Christmas.
Okay. Yeah. See, that's the one. Muppet Family Christmas.
Muppet Family Christmas.
The one Muppet Christmas thing, too, that I can think of, too, is like the Emmett Otter's Jug Band.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a
fan
of that one as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Who doesn't like, you know, jug playing otters? That's awesome.
And a snake playing guitar.
Yeah. I remember watching it as a kid, and it really made me want to put together my own jug band.
Jug band, exactly.
Well, I guarantee you never had a bottle from that point forward that you didn't at some point.
This is very true.
Like when you were a kid, just...
What do you mean when I was a kid?
Oh, yeah. I don't like to make judgments or anything.
Yeah. No, that's... memories. Okay, I guess that brings us to my numero uno, which is, I've kind of mentioned before that I really like this series, and I might be like one of the only people in the world that likes the series, because it seems like every time something awesome comes out relating to this, it just kind of goes away. And that's Amazing Stories, the Steven Spielberg Amazing Stories. It only ran for two seasons, but I thought both seasons were awesome, and I just can't believe it never took off more than it did, because it was the closest thing to the Twilight Zone, I think, at the time, and the quality was awesome. I mean, some of the big name actors were in the episodes. I remember Clint Eastwood directed one episode. I mean, there was like, you know, there's a lot of Hollywood people involved in the show. But the episode that I'm talking about is actually season one, episode 11. And it's called Santa 85, as in 1985. And basically the synopsis of the story is Kris Kringle is out at, delivering presents, as he does. And he gets caught by the police in a house, and the police think he's in that house robbing the house. And so they arrest him. And his sleigh, I believe, is on top of the roof. And the police didn't notice this. They capture him. They haul him off to jail. There's like an 8-year-old boy that sees this and sees the sleigh and everything, and is, you know, basically comes to the conclusion where, wow, I can't let Santa be locked up in prison. There has to be a Santa out there for Christmas. So he goes to the police station, and I believe he works things out, and he takes the sleigh with him, and he uses the sleigh to help pull down the bars, I believe, and free Santa from prison, and kind of ends up saving a day. He gets to ride in a sleigh with Santa, I believe, and they fly off, and yeah, so the kids saved Christmas by saving Santa.
Nice.
I'm just going to go on a limb and say that this podcast contains this sentence I'm about to say more than any other podcast in the world is, you know, I didn't think I had seen that. But then hearing you describe it, I have seen that one. I just didn't realize that was that amazing stories episode. But I remember the jailbreak and everything. But
because even the one, because at the time, you know, we're talking 1985 here, they had the scene where Santa's sleigh goes off.
Who played Santa Claus in that?
You know what? I was going to look that up and I can't remember. I don't think there's really any famous actors in it, though. I don't believe so, anyways. At least not in that particular episode.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. But I just remember the one thing, the sleigh going off into the air being like, at the time, oh my gosh, that is so amazing. The effects on that are incredible. Probably watching it now, it probably wouldn't have the same exact effect, but. Mm. I remember watching it as a kid and being super impressed, and wow. Yeah, so. But, so Amazing Stories, 1985, Santa 1985, Season 1, Episode 11. Watch it.
Check it out.
All right.
All right.
Well, and Chris has seen it, and he didn't even know.
I didn't even realize that. Okay, so, my R. Kelly... number one pick is an episode of Community called Abed's Uncontrollable Christmas. The theory behind the just a brief rundown of what the story is. Joel McHale's character is Jeff, I believe, Jeff Winger. He is a lawyer who it's discovered lied on his resume about his degree he never actually got. He was missing some classes. And so he's disbarred, but offered that he'll get his job back once he gets his degree. So he goes to community college and gets involved in a study group. And the study group has some people, some interesting characters, we'll just say. Mm-hmm. One of those characters is Abed, who is a person with no social skills whatsoever, I would say. Is one of the saddest characters, really. Doesn't seem that way.
But yeah.
He's off in his own world the entire time. I don't know. It's just
it might
have something
like Asperger's.
Yeah, that's exactly like, what I was going to say.
Yeah.
It seems like he and that they never come right out and say it. You're left to decide what it is. But he sees things his own way. And so the episode begins. Well, I'm going to diverge quickly. One of the saddest things I've ever seen in a television show, particularly a sitcom, happened in an episode where Abed was making a movie about his own life. And he said to Jeff, I want you to be my father. And Jeff says, I don't want to be your father. He goes, wow, you really are my father. Like,
oh, yeah, I think I do.
I was like, that is so sad.
That is
but anyway,
sad. Yeah.
Abed, the Christmas episode, is a 100% stop motion episode. All the characters are stop motion from the very first thing, and you find out because they're sitting around talking. He says, this is going to be a really special Christmas. And they're like, why would you say that? He's because why else would you all be stop motion? So you're seeing the episode through the way or through the eyes of Abed's character. And so he goes on a mission to find the meaning of Christmas. And he's tricked into going back to the study group because John Oliver plays the psychology teacher. Yeah. He wants to do an intervention therapy session. And they go just on this lovely, it reminds you almost like of an old, what was it, Seals and Crofts? Not Seals and Crofts. The Rudolphs, heat misers, the old school stop motion.
Which I'm a huge fan of, and I was love this episode because of that.
Yeah, it reminds you a little bit of that. So he goes searching for the meaning of Christmas one by one. His friends do something against the meaning of Christmas, and they're removed from the group. I can't remember except for Chevy Chase's character. He makes it to the end, but well, I guess a couple more. They save him from the.
Yeah.
John Oliver says he's the Christmas wizard and keeps trying to get him to go into the Cave of Memories to try to figure out. Turns out the long and short of it, spoilers. Abed's mother always would come and visit him on December 9th or whatever day of the week, month it was. And this was December 9th, and his mother wasn't there. She couldn't make it. She said, I've started a new family. I can't fly over from wherever it is she lives. You should enjoy Christmas with your father. And he can't get behind this idea, and so he's just broken from that. John Oliver confronts him with this information, and it seals Abed in a thing of ice, and his friends come back and play into his fantasy and sing a song as the claymation characters about all the things that are the meaning of Christmas, and it melts the ice, and a Christmas pterodactyl comes and takes John Oliver away. It screeches down and has a Christmas wreath around its neck, takes him away, and then the one girl goes, and I have a bomb and placed on it, and he's like, oh, don't you think this is going a bit, and then explodes. But it's pretty awesome. So he discovers that the meaning of Christmas is that Christmas has meaning, whatever meaning you give it.
Yeah.
So is the whole point of the episode. It's just lovely. Community is one of the best shows ever.
Oh, it is. I agree. I was always sad to see the. It never seemed to gain the popularity that I always thought that it should.
Because, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man, it's.
Yeah. I think they marketed it wrong, in my opinion. They marketed it like it's a traditional sitcom, and it's really. It's not at all.
No.
And when they would parody something, they just hit it. So best episodes were the paintball episodes.
Oh, yeah, the paintball episodes.
Oh, my
funny
gosh.
Say that because that's the one that was kind of popping in my head, too.
And the where every cheesy 80s line was in there. You know, take my hand if you want to live, you know, whatever. And the pillow fort versus the blanket fort where blanket.
Oh, yeah,
it was done up like it was an old Ken Burns Civil War documentary.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where the people who were building pillow forts met up with
Kick
the blanket.
Puncher.
Yeah.
They
just did some of the Halloween episodes are great.
Yeah.
Everything.
Starburns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think it like kind of fell in line with the rest of development?
It definitely has.
It's a different sensibility, but those are both great shows that I don't think.
Yeah.
Got the credit
they deserve.
Yeah. They didn't never seem to get the right footing somehow. Like I don't know.
And I don't know. You've got Donald Glover who's going on to great things and going on to even greater things. I hear his new Atlanta show. I haven't watched it, but I saw that it was on a bunch of people's top shows of the year list.
Really?
And then of course being Lando.
Yeah.
And then you've got Chevy Chase, who
apparently... Yeah, that's the funniest thing Chevy Chase has been in a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently he couldn't stop being a douchebag long enough to last with the show.
That's what I heard. Which is unfortunate, because he was one of my favorite characters on it, just because it was Chevy Chase. I was like, oh, man,
that's the sad thing is I love Chevy Chase in everything I've seen him in, practically.
Yeah, I agree.
And I just hear that he's sometimes difficult. That could just be all
the last. Only thing I didn't enjoy him on was the Chevy Chase show that he had. Well, and I remember being so excited about that coming out.
Yeah.
And then I just remember watching like one of the episodes. I'm like, oh, this is so not good.
No.
Yeah. It was
not good.
Yeah.
Not good.
And I couldn't understand it because it's like, you know, he used to do the Weekend Update on SNL, and I always thought he was awesome on that.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, he can do this talk show host gig, right? No, I don't know. But yeah, Community's awesome.
Yeah. Watch it. Love it. Live it.
I guess that's all of our issues. There we go.
All of our episodes.
All of our episodes.
This time it's all of our episodes.
Yeah, this is true. There were a few issues maybe,
but almost without fail, when we had issues, we called them episodes.
So. Yeah, this is true.
I would also like to say that this might be we did not have a single thing on Sam's list that took a strange turn this time.
That is true.
And it's the first time.
True. Yeah.
Through no fault of Sam's, by the way.
Exactly.
It's normally, I don't know.
I think the thing that may have derailed us the most is Santa's magical sack.
That's true.
Yeah, that might be.
That was Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Twilight
Zone. Leave it to Twilight Zone to give you a magical sack.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I guess we're done with this episode. This is our Christmas spectacular.
Nothing is more in the spirit of holidays than me saying cunt 12 times
and talking about
magical sex.
Magical sex.
See you next Tuesdays.
There you go. We covered all the bases in
all the bases.
Episode. That's our holiday
bonanza.
There you go.
So, Merry Christmas to everyone.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. All that kind of stuff. We didn't cover all the bases. We apologize, but there you go.
Yeah. All right.
So,
where can we find you at, Rick?
Oh, allofmyissues.com, right? And where are we at on Twitter?
We are all of my issues on Twitter.
There we go.
You can also find us on Twitter. You can find me at Samuel, the number 4, Stevens on Twitter.
Find us on Instagram, all my issues. Email us at allmyissues@gmail.com. All right.
If you have any ideas for lists that you'd like to hear,
email us.
Show us what it is.
And don't forget our website, allmyissues.com, and our Facebook page, All My Issues.
There you go.
We could hook you up with our magical sacks.
There you go. Or if you have questions about our magical sacks.
Yes.
Or if you want to drop a deuce.
Yeah.
Or our yakety sacks.
Yeah. Alrighty. I guess that wraps up this podcast.
All right. Later.
Later.